deep inside the Fox 6 studios.
I don't think there's anybody like him.
In a small, windowless room.
I just hope he knows how talented he is and valued he is.
Is a master of the visual.
He is as fine a journalist as this station has ever produced.
With a vocabulary.
Tons of shit to shoot outside.
Swear as much as possible.
Well, yeah.
You gotta
Yeah.
That could make a sailor blush.
You wouldn't know it, given some of the things I've said over the years. But I like reporters. I do.
This week on Open Record.
Oof, what have I gotten myself into?
We pull the curtain back on The Magician. From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are also joined today by a man who probably wants nothing to do with being in front of a camera, but he's a man who makes television magic behind the scenes, Open Record's video editor extraordinaire, Dave Machuda. Dave, welcome to Open Record.
Hi.
On this side
yes.
of the camera.
Thanks for having me.
We are recording this episode on Valentine's Day, February 14th, for release on Thursday, February 15th. And if you're wondering why Dave is sitting here with us, it's because we're graciously giving us this time because a few days ago, Dave was one of six local television journalists inducted into the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Silver Circle. By the way, National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, those are the Emmy people. So you're familiar with them from the Emmy Awards. They also have something called the Silver Circle, which is an honor that is bestowed upon television journalists, both in front of the camera and behind the scenes, who have excelled at their craft for more than a quarter of a century. And that just means we're all old, right?
So many
we're sitting here with you.
Completely.
We go back way back with Dave. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk about what it means to be a television news editor and the incredible story for which Dave had a front row seat before he ever came to Fox 6. We'll do all that when we come right back. Okay, so Dave, when I say Silver Circle, obviously it means you've been in this business for a very long time and you do go way back. But I want to start with just when we tell people that you're an editor, I think some people will hear editor and think like in a newspaper, you are the like person who's editing scripts that people write or things like that, or you're the boss or whatever it is. But what
in my head,
right?
What is a video editor in television news?
That's a good question.
Right.
It's suddenly existential questions right off the bat, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we take photographers go out and shoot the video, you know, whether it's, let's say, your story about flock cameras, several photographers going out and they'll shoot the interviews. They'll shoot video of the cameras up on the poles. They'll shoot video of traffic, all of that type of thing. Then they bring it back. You log all of it, listen to it, decide what sound bites you need, write the whole thing. And then I just lay all the video down. Basically.
And you pick the best shots. Because I think for the regular person, you shoot video and you're doing this. Not everything you shoot looks good.
Right.
Like the beginning part is a little out of focus, or the end part, your camera's all jiggly. You take the best shots and match it with the words.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously more to it than just...
I think there's so much more
there
to it.
Right.
Because that's an oversimplification, obviously, of what
you're doing. You know, and sometimes it's just choosing the best shot. Sometimes it's, you know, little subtle things like this shot kind of has like a hidden meaning behind it because it works with the script better. You know, a lot of it is dealing with audio issues and making sure that all of that is clean and that kind of stuff. And then you get into something that's a little bit more advanced where it's special effects and, you know, multiple boxes up at the same time and, you know, making things look like film versus video and
or editing to music too.
Yeah,
like people take a lot of that for granted. Like
music
you hear the
selection.
Beats and all of a sudden the shots are changing and in your brain it's like so smooth, but you don't think about how every single cut you're sitting there over and over watching the same piece of video listening to the same music.
That brings up a story. I remember I was doing like some sort of freelance stuff and I was cutting an open for some like documentary or something on PBS. And it was about prison reform or something like that. And they had interviewed one particular guy. And as part of the interview, he like sang some blues song or something like that, you know, in his cell. So, I mean, like for the show, it was really kind of a moving little thing. Well, they used that for the open of the show, him singing this blues song. And so I used that and cut like a 30, 40 second open. And my kids were like, "Dad, if I hear that song one more time, I'm going to come in there and unplug the computer."
Yeah.
Because it was just over and over and over. And that's, you kind of drive yourself crazy, but you worry about literally, you know, a frame of video is a 60th of a second. And so you're sitting there, oh, that was okay. I'm just going to trim it by like, you know, two frames, you know, that kind of thing.
There's a lot of technical stuff to what you do, but I when we talked about who's inducted into the Silver Circle, I used the word journalists. And I think that's really what maybe people don't get when it comes to editing stories, especially when you start talking about some of the investigative pieces you have over the years or the Contact 6 pieces or other things. There is a journalism that goes into shot selection, that goes into how you organize things. And I know when we will, Dave has edited virtually every investigation I've done at Fox 6 News, with very few exceptions over the 20 years that I've been here. And so we've gotten to know each other's, sort of how when we sit down to talk about a script, I know what Dave's looking for, or sometimes I know what I don't have that Dave is going to be looking for. And I sheepishly have to say, okay, for this section of the story, I don't know what we're going to see. I know it's important information. Let's talk about some ideas. But that is a big piece of it, is any reporter can write words and they can have sound bites. But if you don't know what you're going to see in television, that doesn't work.
Right. Oh, totally. Totally. A lot of times like with your scripts, you've thought about everything, what you're going to see for every part of it. And you don't need a reporter to have like literally scripted out every single shot, but you at least want them to have thought about what they're writing or what's going to be showing with it, kind of thing. So that it's not all file video, you know, if they're doing a story on COVID, it's just nothing but file video of
syringes,
and masks,
or you're writing to video like that doesn't exist,
you know, and that kind of thing. And so it's definitely a combination or a marriage of, you know, the words and the images, and hopefully everybody, people on both sides, but myself on the editing side and the reporter on the other side, thinking about the same thing. And like you said, we've been doing it together for so long, we already are kind of on that wavelength kind of thing. But especially for younger reporters that are coming up that haven't been, you know, doing this quite as long, it takes some sometimes, you know, a while to figure out that I have to be thinking in those terms all the time. And then you all, part of that is you can run into problems if you haven't thought about it, but if you're using the wrong images in the wrong place, kind of thing.
You can send messages that mean absolutely something different than what you intended. And sometimes that can be a legal problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Totally. When I started in this business at Fox 6, I was a show editor. So I didn't do like the pieces that, you know, for you and that type of thing. I was just editing regular shows, the 5 o'clock show, the 10 o'clock show, that kind of thing. And occasionally you'd get, let's say there's a story about, somebody was shot at a McDonald's somewhere and it's not necessarily right in our viewing area. And so we don't have video of it or something like that. And some producer will give you a source that is just McDonald's file, but that file is of a local McDonald's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
you've now suggested. Yeah.
Right. You can't put those two together. Mm-hmm. And so you got to, you know, for a show editor, one of their important things is you're the last person that's going to see that video before it hits the air. Mm-hmm. So if you see something like that, hey, this doesn't, you're implicating somebody, you can't do that. Or if,
well, I think of the, I mean, as editors, you're often that last line of defense, right?
Right.
You are the ones that will, you're putting it together. Maybe somebody in a rush called for a source and you look at that video and you go, I don't think this is what they wanted, is it? And if you say nothing, that goes on the air, and then maybe all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. I remember we did a story one time. It was, you know, in a normal newscast, you get a ton of like health stories a lot of times. You know, chocolate's good for you, chocolate's bad for you, chocolate is, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. And this was a story about breast cancer or something like that. And so the producer pulled an old package that we had done like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago about breast cancer kind of thing. And I just was like, we can't be showing these women. Some of these women might be dead, for crying out loud. You can't just be, you know.
Yeah.
And the producer was like, oh, yeah, you're right. And it's an important role for a show editor to be the last line of defense kind of thing. You know, whether it's that or whether it's, you know, let's say it's a fire and some of the video is just a little bit too, you know, graphic, you know, injured person or something like that, you know, or shooting. You can't be showing dead bodies on the air. So they're the last line of defense. So it's a part of their role.
So you started as a show editor, but that's not what you, when you came out of school, that's not what you were doing. So how did you, what did you start out doing and then come into show editing?
How did you get into this?
Yeah. great. Next question.
Well, so it was a dream since you were caught. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, in school, I'd applied for the School of Business when I was at UW-Madison, mainly because my roommate was, you know, he was doing that. And so I had bailed out of one thing already. I was looking for something else. So I applied for the school of business, and I don't know what it's like now, but back then it was hard to get in to the school of business. And so I just kind of, and it was anticipating not getting in. And so I started taking comm arts classes, radio, TV, film, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I had pretty much decided that's where I was going to go. And all of a sudden the school of business let me in. And so I was like, well, heck, I might as well just take advantage of the fact that they let me in. So my degree is in marketing. And so I thought maybe that's not a too bad of a combination. Marketing and then radio, TV, film would be a good like advertising kind of thing. And then when I got out of school, it was mainly marketing type things, sales and that kind of stuff. And
you could have been a sales guy if you didn't drop so many F-bombs. Is that what it would say?
I could have been a sales guy if I was any good at it.
Okay, there's that too.
I just sucked at it. It was, you know, I can't even, you know, now it's so completely out of my, like, personality to do that type of thing. But, you know, when you're young and you're, you know, you're desperate and kind of stuff. And so one of my jobs was working for a local company that sold broadcast video equipment, and Channel 6 actually was one of my clients. And somewhere along the line there, I just realized I don't want to sell this stuff, A, because I'm bad at it, but B, I want to use it rather than sell it. And another one of my clients was looking for a part-time audio engineer. And so I quit the full-time job, went back to school at MATC to get hands-on experience, and then did this part-time audio gig until, you know, I got enough experience and that kind of stuff to get into the actual business of TV news.
So you ended up as a video editor, but I think you have a unique role in especially modern newsrooms, which is most people now who are photojournalists, they're going out into the field getting video, they're editing their own video. They are doing all of it. In some cases, it's a reporter who is also shooting the video, who is also editing their own video. We call it in the business an MMJ, multimedia journalist. It's part of the do more with less that we see across corporate America. So having a dedicated video editor is not, other than maybe the show editors who are, you know, news of the day, they're putting some things out there. But you have been a special projects editor here for a long, long time. How did that even come about? How did that become what you are known for and your specialty?
It's something I'm really grateful for because, as you said, it's not very common. Mid-90s or so is when I had started. And somewhere along the line there, that was when the Packers, their first resurgence with Brett Favre, we started covering them a lot more. And then I started working with Brian Graham, who was our sports producer at the time, to do special projects for the sports department, opens for Packers specials and that type of thing. And we developed a show called the Sunday Morning Blitz. And so that was a Packers pregame show that aired before the Fox pregame show. And so I was working with Brian on that, and I think it was like 1997. My wife at the time died of breast cancer. And so I was left with a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old to raise and trying to work second shift. And it was difficult. And so me and Brian were doing the blitz. I would bring the kids in on Saturday sometimes, which they kind of liked, you know, they would run around the atrium and, you know, ride the elevator up and down and all that kind of stuff. And so our news director at the time, Jill Geisler, realized that that just wasn't going to work as a long-term solution for me to be working second shift, trying to raise two kids and that kind of stuff. So she invented the role of special projects editor specifically to allow me to stay at the station, continue to do interesting stuff like the Sunday Morning Blitz and some other stuff. And so she made it a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 job that, you know, I wouldn't be here doing this if she hadn't done that back then.
I have to imagine she must have seen something in you even mm-hmm. back then, because either that or just serendipity, she creates a position and you become absolutely one of the best ever at it. Did you know back then you were that good of an editor? Did she know that? Oh. It was like, we got to find a way to keep him around.
Back then, I had edited because I started as a show editor and then morphed into this, you know, other role. So I did, you know, health stories and different, you know, different regular full-blown packages and things. But at that time, when she invented the position, it was mainly me working with Brian on the Sunday Morning Blitz doing sports stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing a ton of that kind of stuff. And which is funny now, because now I barely touch sports at all, but that's where it all started, was doing sports and a lot of like music, almost like music videos for sports, mm-hmm. That type of thing. And so at that time I had no inkling that it was going to turn into something like this, where, you know, they're longer, you know, 6-7 minute pieces with elaborate graphics and all that kind of stuff. You know, back then, me and Brian were just setting Packers highlights to Green Day.
Yeah.
Or Barry Manilow.
Yes.
Barry Manilow, you talked about that. So you've been at Fox 6 since the mid-90s, roughly, right? Yeah. I think it was around the time of the...
fall of 94.
So it was around the time of the affiliate swap when TV6 was CBS and then became Fox.
Yes.
And you came. So you've been here. You've been through a lot of news. You've seen a lot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to actually talk about one of the biggest stories of your career before you ever got to Fox 6 News. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Before you came to Fox 6 in 1994, you said it was?
Yeah.
1994. One of the biggest stories probably in American history happened right here in Milwaukee, and that was the trial of Jeffrey Dahmer. Obviously, if you don't know who Jeffrey Dahmer was, we don't have time for me to explain that to you in this podcast, but obviously podcast, one of the most notorious mass murderers or serial killers in history. And tell me how you ended up at the Dahmer trial.
At the time, I was working commercial production, so, you know, editing car dealer ads and all that kind of stuff. And part of what we did, our company, was we did freelance stuff for Court TV. I don't even think Court TV exists anymore. Are they now True TV or something?
Yeah.
Or I don't know, whatever. Yeah. But so we did a few trials for them. They would, when they would do a trial, they would send, a lot of times they would send a reporter to the city and then contract with a local production company to shoot the trial. And so we did, one of the other trials we did was Jesse Anderson. I don't know if you remember him. Mm-hmm. We did Charles Barkley.
Oh, really? Okay.
He got into a bar fight in Milwaukee. Wow. And so we got to hang out with Charles Barkley between.
Hang out.
You know, in
the did you hang out with Jeffrey Dahmer between? No. Okay. No. All right. I just want to clarify.
So we did several different trials for Court TV, and then when the Dahmer thing came up, they hired us to do that. And that was it turned into more like for like the Barkley trial, it was just us, the small production company. It was like three of us doing that kind of thing. The Dahmer thing was obviously a much bigger deal. And so I ended up running the camera. We had two cameras up on top of the divider. They're like robotic cameras. And then only one actual human operated camera kind of thing on the other side of the glass. So they had a little riser right behind the defense table. So it was behind the defense table and over a little bit, you know, maybe.
So you were on the side with all of the parties, the defense, and the prosecution, with Dahmer. Okay.
Yeah. So we were right behind his table, you know, maybe 5 or 6 feet away, and on a little riser. So we were up a little bit. So I ran that camera for, I think it was like 3 weeks, the trial was maybe something like that. So, you know, every day him in and out, you'd follow him in and follow. Gosh, sorry about that, Kale.
sorry about that, Dave.
You're the one that has to edit it.
The best part, Dave gets to edit his own podcast. Yes.
He was already like, oh, I have to listen to my voice for 45 minutes.
Yes, I know. And I haven't sworn yet. So it's, but anyway, yeah. So it was, you know, day after day of having to listen to that.
What was he like? I mean, because you're on that, especially when there's the moments between something starting or whatever it is, that sort of that downtime, was he quiet? Did he talk? What was he like?
He was very quiet. I mean, so he wasn't really that terribly creepy. I remember thinking that Jesse Anderson was a little creepier in person than Dahmer was, except that there was one time Dahmer was coming in, you know, he comes in from they brought him up some back hallway. So he comes in that door and comes right towards his desk. So he's walking right towards me. And I'm just, you know, it was a camera that was up in the air like this. And so I'm like operating it back and forth. And, you know, I had done it 100 times already. So you expect him just to kind of walk through and go and sit down. And so I'm watching him and he's walking and he's all of a sudden he starts speaking. And it threw me off so much that he walked out of frame because I think the camera just stopped. I was like, what's going on? I zoom out. He was speaking and was speaking right to the camera, probably this far away, as far as we are. And he had a copy of a newspaper. There was the National Enquirer headline was Dahmer eats cellmate.
Wow. So
and
he was talking about that?
About that. He goes, you see what they're writing about me or something like that? But he stopped and addressed the camera pretty directly. And that freaked me the heck out. I mean, it was just...
It's like he's addressing you one-on-one because you've never heard his voice.
Yeah. He didn't testify. You basically never heard his voice. And so that was, I got it back in as quickly as I could, but that was a little, disconcerting to see, you know, that kind of thing.
So one of the things, you know, 1991, the trial, and starting at Fox 6 in the mid-90s, we're in 2024. Technology has certainly changed.
Oh, God.
And so you've kind of run the gamut of, I mean, when I started in TV, we were running tapes from a tape room.
Oh, yeah.
An editor.
Like
sorry,
the movie Broadcast
to,
News.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, really, at my first station, you ran up 2 flights of stairs. And if that tape was late, you were double staring, hoofing it up there to get it to the tape guy to stick it in there. So talk about some of the technology that's changed.
It's funny because my first job, not at Channel 6, at Channel 18 in news, was almost the opposite. It was downstairs. So you'd be editing a show and you'd go downstairs. And I was really good because it was 2 flights of stairs, one this way, and then it would turn that turn.
Ooh, you really grab the rail,
hang on the rail, you jump the four last steps, and you kind of start to turn in midair. Oh, it was really
good. You were good young
and
agile.
And now I would be dead. Yes.
You know, I mean, I think back then when it was all on tape, also you have the tape that's got to go on the show, but there's also the raw tape that a photographer shot in the field.
Yeah.
The producers need that because they need to cut teases for the show. Yep. And the reporter needs it because they need to log the video so they can write their story. And the editor needs it because you need. So there was always that, literally a physical battle for where is the tape and get
Who's
me the
got
tape.
It? Oh, right?
I had a reporter throw a tape at me one time because he was so sick. You know, I had to cut a tease for his story that he was working on. And I'd come up to him like 3 or 4 times already saying, I need that tape. Just give it to me for 2 minutes and I will run and cut the tease. And he got so irritated with me asking for it that he literally took the tape and just chucked it at
me. Those things are hard.
They're hard quarters. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do some damage.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think about how much I'll throw all the show editors under the bus right now, that they have it so easy compared to what we
do. The video's right there
back
at your
my
desk.
Day.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Back when I first started show editing, we were editing on 3/4-inch tape, which is basically, for anybody that doesn't know, they're like giant VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
It would take that tape almost 10 seconds to eject from the machine.
Oh, yeah, right. Gosh.
And so when we would slate the show, which is putting the title of the thing on each tape, I would do that in 2 different edit bays at the same time because it would take 10 seconds to eject the tape. I could run into the other one, do something, and come back, and the tape was still coming out. And, you know, that kind of stuff. I remember one time I put a stopwatch around my neck to see how much time I spent looking for things, like looking for tapes, bothering a reporter. And about halfway through the day, I stopped doing it because I was spending 3/4 of my time running around grabbing things and looking for things than I compared to editing.
Now, because of the physical nature of what it was at the time, you would insert a tape, you would wait for it to load, you would cut a piece from that to the other tape that it was going on to, you'd pop that tape out, put another one in. Because of that, it was really limited what you could do in terms of creativity, in terms of certainly graphics and other things. Now here we are in a computer world, a nonlinear editing world, where not only can you have all of those video sources just loaded on the computer and you can make edits and transitions and sort of things, you also can do things graphically and with animation and other effects that you never could do before. And I don't know anyone who has become as skilled at doing it as thoroughly and as quickly as you. And I know there are a lot of photographers here at Fox 6 News who say, Dave, can you teach me how to do this? But you have obviously built those skills over the years to where now you are sometimes creating things completely out of thin air that don't exist, but look like real documents or like I think I pointed out in the video we did for your Silver Circle induction, a tabletop that doesn't exist, but it's got the texture of reflection and shadowing and things. I mean, can you talk about how you've developed those skills out of from a tape to tape world to where we are today?
I don't really know exactly how I did it. It's basically just being around it for so long. Yeah. I used Final Cut Pro to edit. A lot of people will be familiar with Adobe Premiere and After Effects. This is Apple's version of that. So I use something called Motion. And part of it is just out of necessity and part of just out of personal boredom. Like I've done the same document so many times. There's only so many times you can have a document on the screen and highlight a piece of video or a piece of text from it.
Yeah, right.
That, you know, just to amuse myself, I'm like, okay, let's see if I can make this more interesting looking. Okay, instead of just highlighting the thing, I'll cut it out and pull it out of the document. Okay, that's interesting. Now I've done that a bunch of times. How about if I make the rest of the document blur out, but you leave the text you want in focus? You know, there's multiple ways of doing the same thing.
Make it move in 3 dimensions while I'm highlighting.
Yeah, right.
You know, part of it is predicated on how much time do you have. You know, so luckily when I'm editing your pieces, I have the time kind of thing. If you're doing a, you know, shorter term story, you don't have the time to mess around like that. Mm-hmm. So everything is always, you know, no matter what you do, it's always predicated on how much time you have. You know, there's always the deadlines and, you know, that type of thing.
I also think you said born out of necessity, and we didn't talk about this earlier, but the number of times that reporters, me being one of them, will give you something where you go, I don't know what we're going to see here, or we've just seen three sections of documents in a row and I have nothing for this one, so I hope you can come up with something. You are the person, unfortunately, who's become the guy when people don't have a solution, they go, Dave will fix it. Dave will come up with something. And actually, sometimes I have thought, because of how well you do with that, that maybe I should give Dave less. Because maybe my stories would be even better if I just left it to his genius to figure it out. You would be frustrated as could be, and yet somehow you would always come through, and you've done that time and time again. But I think some of those creative things you've done were because there was no other visual solution, right?
Right, right. Yeah, that's a thing I've been doing more lately is just parts of somebody else's story. So let's say, well, like Ben Handelman did the Kurtaberger story, and he wanted to talk about how it came about as far as tweet that went viral and all the responses and things like that. And how do you show that? How do you show something about something going viral video-wise? It's really difficult to, you can't shoot video.
Besides showing the tweet.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and that kind of thing. So he's like, well, can we show the original tweet, and can we show all the retweets and the comments and that kind of stuff to give it a sense of how viral it went, kind of thing. And so I only cut that 30 seconds of his longer 4 or 5 minute story, that kind of thing. And I've been doing that more this past year than I ever have. And that's actually kind of fun, because then you're just doing that one little chunk.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're like, Ben's thing was pretty vague. Here's the tweet.
Right. Here's the link to the tweet.
And you know, with a bunch of responses, come up with something that's going to last about 30 seconds out of that. And other times they're very specific. I have these stats and I want to say this and this. And so then it's a pretty simple, you know, this population is twice as likely to get cancer as this other population. So it's a fairly simple kind of thing. So it goes back and forth. I mean, sometimes you like the creativity of having free reign to do whatever you want, but at the same time, sometimes it's nice to have a little bit of direction. Like, okay, what are you thinking this to be?
I've started with reporters because in charge of promotable calendar and our longer form stories, and they have a chunk of their script and they go, I think I just want a graphic right here. I'll just talk to Dave about that. And
can I bring up an example?
Please.
That,
yes. Because I have started.
I'm not going to, I don't want to out the reporter. No. But can I tell the Renaissance?
Oh yeah, totally.
So when you do a script, you know, television news for a long time, because of the teleprompter, when it used to be that the script would actually physically pass in front of the camera, like, you know, I don't know which way I'm going here, but it would physically pass in front of the camera, you know, like this. So one section of the script would be this, it had to be a narrow strip of script. One section of the script would be the actual on-air script. The other half would be edit marks for, you know, whoever needs to see, you know, camera things or things that you want the editor to know. Here's the video source to put in here. And so when I do a story, I'll have sort of over on the left side some, you know, I think it's this soundbite, this time code, or I'm thinking of this video here, and then we'll talk about it. You got a script one time. Tell me, you got to tell the story.
The script was, the story I think was about a local photographer or something, I'm not really sure. And so he had some sort of project that he was working on that dealt with royalty or something back in the Renaissance or something like that, you know. And normally, like you said, normally the video instructions would say, you know, show the exteriors of the building, you know, where the murder happened here. Show this. This one, the video instruction just said Renaissance. I'm like, first of all, what format were they on in the Renaissance?
What does that mean?
Were they still shooting on film?
Probably
they
tablets.
Moved to beta tape yet?
You know? Artist sketches.
Right. You know, so like, what do you mean Renaissance? Where do we get it? What is it supposed to look like?
It's got to be the hardest part of the job is interpreting what is in the mind of reporters and producers when we write things, because
I'd argue that there isn't much there to begin
with.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
This is going to lead to the next. It is a perfect thing because I do have on the list. So I want to talk about, you are sort of known for your colorful language. And that actually came up in the induction ceremony for the Silver Circle, which I want to take a break. We're going to talk about the Silver Circle a little bit when we come right back. So this was it was Sunday, right? This is just this past Sunday.
Is today.
Yeah,
Super Bowl Sunday.
Dave, one of six journalists locally inducted into the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Silver Circle. So this is like a lifetime achievement. This is excellence in your profession for more than a quarter of a century. There was one person, by the way, who was actually given the first ever Gold Circle for more than 50 years of service. And name escapes me. I'd have to pull up the program here. This was public television. It was Everett Marshburn. 55 years at Milwaukee PBS. Phenomenal. What a career. But you've been doing this for a really long time. And so there's a presentation, which I know you were delighted to get in front of people and give a speech. So excited. Right?
Yeah, it was fun.
You talked about so long just being so nervous about it. You put so much time into the speech.
I appreciate it's probably good that there was that amount of time to prepare for it because I don't normally write anything. So to write the speech is going to take me a while. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, to have like three or 4 months notice and just stress about it for the entire time, this thing just looming out there the entire time, that was just enough to kill me.
I feel like, and I'm sorry, you were there. You can, I think, attest to this. I feel like, though, the cavern between how nervous and concerned you were about it and how good your speech was.
You never would have known.
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was structured well. It had a theme. It had a great quote at the end.
That's you pulled up George. That's what you care about is the structure.
What's your thesis?
I had a great admiration for it as a writer. Uh-huh. And I was like, that was really well done. And you didn't seem nervous. I'm sure you probably were, but you it was a great thing. But prior to his speech, there's a video that Fox 6's Ted Perry put together, and he interviewed some of us about Dave and our thoughts on Dave, and then just told a little story about who Dave is. And in that piece, there was just a great focus on a character trait, a personality trait that you are well known for, which
so
is
endearing.
Basically, I'll just put it this way. The video ended with a pan up to a, like a thought bubble that's outside of Dave's room, or a talk bubble that just shows, like, you know, basically, it's a curse word, but with characters like, you know, exclamation asterisk. Point and asterisk and all that. And as the camera's panning up, he says, you know, that's something we'll swear by. You're known for your colorful language. I'm wondering, has that always been your personality, or did this job do that to you? Or is that just, is it some of both?
Definitely some of both. You know, anybody that's worked in a newsroom knows that that's a little bit of a trait of most newsrooms, maybe less so now than, you know, 20, 30 years ago kind of thing. I could swear that now, this could be just my mush brain not remembering things right. I could swear that I used to have a producer when I first started here who was like out of central casting kind of thing, you know, smoker's voice, you know, blah, blah, blah. I need that VO now, that kind of stuff. And I swear to God, he had a bottle of whiskey in his desk.
All the old days.
I don't know if that's true or if it's just, like I said, my brain is mixing up, you know, movies with this character. But so newsrooms already lean towards that. And then you ramp up the stress that's involved, like especially for show editing, where you're under the gun constantly and that type of thing. And it's just, it's the perfect place for
it
foul
really,
language.
It truly is.
Then it just became an innate type of thing. You know,
favorite part of the video is Eddie Poser, photographer here, who shot the video. He set up outside your edit bay, and it's this small edit bay that's in, you know, windowless and the whole thing. You are away from the newsroom, so there's also a little more freedom to just
Be
yourself, right? So he decides to set up and get some video, and we know already that there's going to be this theme of Dave's language as part of this video, and he wants to get some just video of Dave working. And I was talking to Eddie about this yesterday, and I said, the stuff where you've got Dave cursing, you know, dropping F-bombs, it was so natural. He goes, I just set up for a little while. And he goes, none of that was scripted. None of that was forced. He was doing it.
Like Dave starts swearing.
He said, I just wanted to watch long enough to let the F-bombs leak out. I love that line because the F-bombs leaked out. Well, and they were so natural.
I think they leaked out almost right away.
As
soon as you started shooting video, I was like, what the f*** are you doing?
You get to bleep yourself out when you edit this. That's fantastic.
One other real quick story about that before I forget. When we were, I think we were doing a new studio, remodeling the studio. And so the new set, they moved out to the atrium in the middle of our building. And that was sort of down the hall from the old edit area, not where we are now. And they multiple times had to come and tell us to be quiet and stop swearing so much because it was leaking out down the hall and you could hear it on the air.
That's fantastic.
In the middle of newscast, you could hear us like screaming and yelling and that kind of stuff. So,
We could probably talk forever, but we actually have a little surprise for you. And I want to make sure we get this in.
Oh, Jesus.
We,
This is your life.
So we, you know, there are a lot of people you've worked with over the years who are no longer here at Fox 6 News, but they still have wonderful things to say about their time with Dave Majuda. So I want to hear, we want to play and hear from a few of those right now and have you watch it with us.
Oh, God.
All right. So tell a story about Dave Majuda from my time at Fox 6 working with him, and it's got to be on air safe.
The only weird thing or thing that I remember, a weird anecdote about you, is that you don't like I Love Lucy.
When I hear the name Dave Majuda, I think of a bear. At first, a grizzly bear. His looks are intimidating, and you wonder just how bad that bite could be. And then you start talking with Dave, and you realize he's nothing more than a teddy bear.
I don't think I've ever worked with anybody who swore more, who wore shorts in all temperatures. You're like a junior high boy. And I don't think I've ever worked with anybody who kind of straddled the line between lovable and curmudgeon quite like you.
Just hearing you talking in your edit booth while you were working, that is my most vivid memory and reoccurring.
His edit bay door is always open to listen to anyone talk life.
It is the walk-in closet where everyone in the newsroom walks in. He is the hub of the newsroom.
An investigative reporter is only as good as his or her photojournalist and editor, and boy, was I lucky to get to work with Dave Majuda, one of the best in the business.
We always have Majuda in our head when we're out on the shoot. Did we get the right shots? Is he going to be happy with what we got? Is he going to have to make chicken salad out of you know what?
So often Dave is given stories that might not have the best visuals, but are still important to tell viewers. And he finds a great way to make it visual and yet entertaining and still get the information across to viewers.
And it is just incredible to know that you could hand a script to someone and know that he is going to make your story so much better.
You're great at your job. You truly have a gift. But the best thing about the gift that you have is your willingness to share it with other people.
He's willing to share all the tips and tricks of how he puts together amazing pieces.
Dave was always there to mentor me and show me the correct way to do things in a professional environment when I wasn't always the most professional kid.
I swear I can't tell you how much I look up to you. I appreciate you and I thank you for everything you've taught me. When I get behind these keyboards every day, man, I'm only trying to impress one person, and that's you. Because if I get your seal of approval, what can they say? That's real.
Dave Majuda taught me everything I know about editing. He taught me about, appropriate transitions, taught me about, appropriate use of natural sound.
I have been waiting for the day for you to retire because, you know, I've been wanting your job forever, but, you know, you're not going to leave.
And I hope you're here another 50 years. Because me to do anything like this cat, beat it with a capital B.
I worked at a lot of places before Fox 6 and a lot of places after in a bunch of different fields. And I don't think there was anybody as good at their job that I've ever worked with as you are at your job.
Dave, thank you so much for your incredible talent. Thank you for making everyone around you better.
You are the best to ever do it, the best that ever will do it.
You're the best editor that I have ever known. You're great at your job. You truly have a gift.
You are the best of the best.
You are magical at what you do.
There is nobody that makes news or ordinary life look as good as you do.
So, Dave, congrats. You earned it.
Huge congratulations to you.
Congratulations, crazy.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Dave, congratulations on this well-deserved honor.
Wow. So there you go.
Yay.
And that's just a sprinkling of the people. I mean, I can only think of all the people you have worked with and who your work has touched over the years.
Wow, that was awesome to see a bunch of people I haven't seen in a long time.
I, if I had time, I would love to have reached out to even more, but I realized my connection to so many people is in many cases the on-air people who we've worked with in the investigative unit in Contact 6, but I just think of the number of photographers and editors, reporters, anchors you have worked with.
Well, and I can't even remember half of them, to tell you the truth. Right? I mean, the amount of, like, especially like editors, show editors, part-time editors have gone through, you know, over the years, people will pull up names. I'm like, oh yeah, it's just been it's been a lot.
Well, and still, what, that. My, that was, my favorite part awesome. Is that it's still going. That well, you yeah. are still here. And yeah. I've said, if you go anywhere, the
we're all going the, with you.
My proof will be revealed, and, yeah. and they'll be like, he's not that good after all. So we are running short on time, but I want to take a break. We'll come back. We'll have to do a quick off the record segment when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual, have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. But of course, Sarah has that question today.
So because we're short on time, I was like, I think I'm going to save this other one. Sorry, Dave.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, how about this? I'm calling it audible. What meal traumatized you as a kid?
Oh, I know mine, but I want to hear yours.
Me and my brothers and sisters still joke about this. My mom made something called salmon loaf.
Oh, just the name
just
of it.
The name.
That sounds yeah. delicious. Mm.
And it's pretty much what you would think of. It was okay. like meatloaf, but made with like salmon or something.
Like a salmon cake, but
you know, and this yeah. is, you know, and there were very few things that my mom would not let us eat. And unfortunately, that wasn't one of them. She made us eat that kind of thing. The one thing that she didn't force us to eat was liver and onions.
Yeah, yeah, no.
And I think she didn't force us to eat that. Just my dad and my grandpa ate that. She didn't eat that. She didn't force us to because she wouldn't eat it.
Oh,
so
that's a good mom.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'd be like, I'm not eating that. You're going to eat it.
Well, yeah. And I remember asking her one time, I was like, you know, mom, I was like 10 years old, you know, why don't you eat the liver and onions? You make it for grandpa and for dad. Why don't you eat it? And she just goes, because it tastes like shit.
That's true.
And I was like, first time I'd ever heard my mom swear.
Okay,
like,
mom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now we know where it came from. Okay. So I think back, it's very clear to me. Back in the day, I think people used to make a lot more casseroles.
Oh, totally.
Like yeah. I think casseroles yeah. was, you know, if you didn't have a good casserole set. And so my mom used to make something that was like a, I don't even know what it was exactly, except that it was a casserole that I know had chunks of mushroom in it. It was pasta. It had a little like cubes of mushroom
sounds
or something.
Delicious,
little
actually.
Chunks. And it was the mushroom
cubes.
It is kind of like chicken cubes, but there are mushrooms. She didn't have an air fryer. So no, but there's something about the texture of mushroom, even to this day, that I'm not a big fan of. I've come around same. On mushrooms, still not pickles, but the mushrooms, I just, there was something about this dish. It would be a mound on my plate. And I just, if I could try to pick out each and every individual mushroom, I might be okay. But mostly the thought of just taking that bite gave me that immediate gag reflex. Yeah. And I couldn't, you know, it probably was a very delicious casserole, yeah. but I had that mental block that one I had. So when I knew it was, that's what was being made. You had that, like, I'd be playing outside, you know, we're playing ball
dinner
in the street
time.
And then you smell the, oh no, it's casserole.
Oh, and, yeah. No.
When you ask your friend, hey, can you invite me over
to dinner? Can I come hang out at your house
I'm
tonight?
I'm going to Brian's house.
Right, yeah. No,
I'm totally with you on the casserole, but it was tuna for me.
Oh, okay.
Tuna casserole with like the chips on the top.
Oh,
that sounds okay.
Yeah. I love it. No, I love it now. Like I would eat the crap out of that now. But when as a kid, you just smell it, and I'm like, ugh.
Sarah, what's yours?
I'm more of like my dad used to make these like liver sausage sandwiches. It was just like, is it Braunschweiger?
Braunschweiger.
The smell of it. And so
I don't love, my dad loved it.
And so we would make it, or like ring bologna is also disgusting to me.
Oh, I love ring bologna too.
But now, so like 2000s, Sarah, one of my girlfriends was like, I made this dip. It's Braunschweiger dip. It's really good. And I thought maybe I'll change my mind on it. Brought me right back. No thanks. Liver sausage. That's it for me.
You know what liver sausage is really good for? Is
nope.
If you have
trash.
No, if you have pets and you need to give them pills.
Oh.
Oh, sure.
You can kind of like form.
Shove that in there. And, you know, my dog would just like drool as soon as he sees the thing come out.
And eat those
perfect
pills.
Perfect for that.
Okay. Basically, Braunschweiger's like liver pate, essentially.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
It's really what it is. And I remember going to Port Hotel when it existed. And they would bring out the little appetizer plate that had the pate and the little of the vegetables or whatever it is. And that to me was, I would just give me bread. Other bread is fine.
Just bread, yeah.
And that's, I think, a good time for us to wrap things up. Dave, this has been great. Thank you for coming on.
Just
kind of much like the speech. We do have to take, I'm sorry. Hey, yeah. We'll take one more break. We'll come right back after this. All right. So, you know, I'm new to this. I've never done TV before. Apparently, I didn't take enough breaks. But that was our final
That's why
break.
I'm here.
Dave, thank you so much for coming on. I know that front of the camera is not your forte, but boy, are you good at it. Oh, I mean, this has been fantastic.
I wish you would have worn your really, really huge, cool medal.
I thought about it. It's hanging
you
on should.
The wall. Oh, yeah, the medallion. Yeah. That was great.
It probably messed with the frequencies of the microphone.
Yeah.
You got to get down and edit this thing. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.